everyone. Welcome to China Money Podcast, a weekly in-depth interview show on private equity, venture capital, and hedge fund investments in China. I'm your host, Nina Xiang. Every week, I talk to a Chinese fund manager, an industry expert, or a limited partner. We discuss strategies, industries, opportunities, and challenges investing in the Chinese markets. To get our program, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or go to our website at ChinaMoneyPodcast.com and sign up to our newsletters. You can also like our Facebook page or follow us on Twitter at ChinaMoneyPod. Our program is free, and this is made possible by support from our listeners, our dear advertisers and sponsors. If you'd like to support us, it's simple. Just go to ChinaMoneyPodcast.com and click on any of our sponsors' ads and sign up for their great services. Today, I'd like to highlight one of our sponsors' great services, that is FedEx Office Online Printing. Suppose you're on a business trip or a vacation where there are no printing services, or just working on something urgent in the office and office printer doesn't work, what do you do? Use FedEx Office Online Printing. Easily send your documents to FedEx for convenient online printing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, anywhere, anytime. Then you can either pick up the documents at the FedEx office nearest to you, save precious time on waiting in line, or get your documents delivered using FedEx. This is a service that really could be useful at a time of need. And when you do, please consider clicking the FedEx office link on China Money Podcast website to give us some love and some support. In fact, we need just 6 more orders from our links for us to enjoy a little bit reward from FedEx office in the next month. So please support us if you can. And we thank you so much for your great support. Our guest today is Paul Gillis, professor of accounting at the Guanghua School of Management at Peking University in Beijing, China. Professor Gillis is a returning guest to China Money Podcast. He is an expert on Chinese accounting issues and also is a member of the PACOB's Standing Advisory Group. The PACOB is Public Company Accounting Oversight Board. It's a nonprofit corporation established by the U.S. Congress to oversee the audits of public companies in the United States. Today, we're inviting Professor Gillis back to the podcast to discuss the latest shocking scandal relating to Chinese accounting fraud. Many of you might have heard Caterpillar's massive $580 million write-down relating to its acquisition of a Chinese mining company. We're going to talk about the most commonly used tactics by Chinese companies to defraud investors. And what can you do as foreign investors to protect yourself? But before we go to the interview, let's just quickly go through last week's biggest news. The January HSBC Purchasing Managers Index rose to 52, the highest since January 2011, stocking up predictions that China's economy is picking up later part of last year's slowdown. But economists remain cautious about the strength of the recovery in consideration of troubles in the Eurozone and North America. On China's financial reform front, on January 28th, 15 commercial banks from Hong Kong signed cross-border loan agreements to provide 2 billion RMB of funding to companies in the Qianhai Special Economic Zone. And the Shenzhen branches of China Construction Bank and Bank of Communications also signed agreements to lend 620 million RMB to companies in Hong Kong. ANZ notes that China's capital accounts liberation process is off to a quick start in 2013. The cross-border lending may be a breakthrough of Chinese capital account convertibility with future expansion expected. It could also be an experiment for the Chinese government to pilot market-determined interest rates at the Hong Kong banks involved in the cross-border RMB lending are not subject to Chinese central bank's lending rate restrictions. Lastly, private equity fundraising in the Asian Pacific region dropped 50% in the second half of 2012 to $18.9 billion. That's 50%, the lowest 6 months figure since 2009 during the depths of the financial crisis. This is according to reports from Asian Venture Capital Journal. In China, the problem of difficult exits means private equity firms are holding on to companies that they can't find ways to exit fast enough. Private equity funds in China are still holding 82% of the companies they've invested since 2007, according to China First Capital. In total, funds are holding 6,584 companies after disposing 1,445 and seeing 20 go bankrupt. The IPO market, the biggest exit for Chinese private equity firms, saw its IPO volume down 64% in 2012 to just $14.6 billion. That's a quick news review. Now let's go to the interview with Professor Gillis, Professor of Accounting at the Guanghua School of Management at Peking University in Beijing, China. Professor Gillis is in Las Vegas and I'm still in New York. So we talk over the phone and here is the interview. Hope you enjoy it. Hi, Paul. Welcome back to China Money Podcast.
Thank you, Nina.
So today we'll discuss the latest and shocking scandal relating to Chinese accounting fraud and more broadly the tactics Chinese companies use to defraud investors. Let's look at the latest victim, American heavy machinery maker Caterpillar. It is taking a $580 million write-down of its acquisition of a Chinese mining company after Caterpillar discovered a deliberate multi-year coordinated accounting misconduct by the acquired Chinese company. For those of you who are not familiar with the case, here are some backgrounders. In November 2011, Caterpillar announced that it is buying Chinese mining company ERA Mining Machinery Limited for roughly $700 million. A critical fact here is that ERA is a publicly traded company on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. But its main business is conducted by its wholly owned subsidiary, a Henan province-based mining equipment maker, Zhengzhou Siwei Mechanical and Electrical Manufacturing. We'll just call it Siwei for simplicity's sake in our discussion going forward. It's important to note that ERA, the Hong Kong-listed company, did a reverse merger with Siwei in 2010. So in November 2011, when Caterpillar bought Hong Kong-listed ERA, it was in effect buying the shell company that owned mainland-operated Siwei. This is important as we will discuss later. So the deal was completed in June 2012, and 6 months later, in January 2013, just more than 2 weeks ago, Caterpillar announced that it is taking a $580 million write-down of non-cash goodwill impairment charge. That's over 80% of the deal's original $700 million price tag. So that's a brief background. And Paul, first, can you use your imagination and picture what do you think happened when Caterpillar's CFO told the CEO about this massive loss on the deal they just closed 6 months ago?
I imagine that was a pretty awkward situation. I mean, it's very embarrassing for everyone at Caterpillar to have been involved in a transaction like this. And I'm sure there's a search for the guilty parties underway.
Here is what Caterpillar disclosed about how they found out about accounting misconduct. Quote, Caterpillar first became concerned about an issue when discrepancies were identified in November 2012 between the inventory recorded in Siwei's accounting records and the company's actual physical inventory. This was determined by a physical inventory count conducted at Siwei as part of Caterpillar's integration process. Caterpillar promptly launched a comprehensive review and investigation into the nature and source of this discrepancy. This extensive review has identified inappropriate accounting practices involving improper cost allocation that resulted in overstated profit. They reveal further identified improper revenue recognition practices involving early and at times unsupported revenue recognition. End of quote. From this statement, Paul, what can you infer? What kind of accounting fraud Siwei has done?
The first thing they point to is that they had problems with the inventory. And what that means is they went out and counted the inventory that that they had at the factory, and they found out they didn't have as much as they had recorded on their books, which means that they had, you know, they found that the books still carried costs for inventory that didn't exist. It had either been sold already and hadn't been expensed when they sold it, or it was never there in the first place. They say that part of that problem is that they capitalized too many costs to it. What that suggests happened is that they were capitalizing too many items that weren't really related to the production of the machinery that they were making. They were capitalizing these costs and then carrying it in inventory cost as opposed to expensing it in the current period. If they expensed it in the current period, their profits would have been significantly lower. The more serious allegation in my mind here is this allegation that some of the revenues were recorded early or inappropriately. What that suggests is that some of these sales were recorded before the sale was actually completed. Now, that's not an uncommon problem in China. Western accounting standards are very detailed in terms of when you can recognize revenue. You have to have signed contracts, and you can't have rights of return or too much wiggle room for the purchaser to get out of the contract or obligations to do more things in the future, such as install the equipment or make sure it works and things like that. It sounds like what could have happened here is that they could have recognized the revenue before they had all that paperwork done. In China, business is done more on the basis of relationships. The contracts are less important than the handshake. So I would not be surprised if the people who are involved in this situation don't think that they were involved in any kind of fraud, but under Western accounting standards, it was recognized way too early.
It does sound like from its statement that the company or the auditor actually didn't check out Siwei's books and didn't do physical inventory examinations during the due diligence process. Do you think so?
Well, it's hard to say because we don't know what was done during due diligence. However, Caterpillar says they hired two Big Four firms, Ernst & Young and Deloitte Touche. Did the accounting firm not adequately look at what was right there in their face and identify the issues that, you know, that appear to be obvious? Or did Caterpillar tell them they didn't want them to look at certain things? The other part of the problem with due diligence is that, you know, you have to get access to the records and the people to do that. In some situations, you get more access than you get in other situations.
In this case, there were plenty of red flags, particularly Siwei did do a reverse merger with ERA. That should already tell the auditors and the companies who's planning to buy that they should pay extra attention.
Well, I think we have learned a lesson about reverse mergers. The lack of scrutiny of reverse merger transactions is a very dangerous situation. The number of frauds that have been and accounting problems that have been associated with reverse mergers is huge. Now, we've seen most of those have been U.S. reverse mergers, and there haven't been that many reverse mergers in Hong Kong. I think that all of the markets have to be very cautious about allowing reverse mergers to take place. The U.S. stock exchanges have effectively stopped reverse mergers because of some new rules they have that any reverse merger has to be seasoned before it can be listed. Hong Kong probably ought to be looking at a similar rule.
Caterpillar did suffer such a massive $580 million write-down. Who can Caterpillar sue right now?
The write-down of $580 million is a huge write-down. It's most of the purchase price that they paid for the company. Caterpillar paid a significant amount more than the book value of the assets of this company when it acquired it. When you pay more than the value of the tangible assets that you've bought, the excess gets put into goodwill. And goodwill is an intangible asset that sits on the balance sheet and as an asset and is carried. Now, every year, the company has to look at the balance that it has in goodwill and determine whether it can continue to justify carrying that balance on the balance sheet. And the way it does that is it calculates the estimated future cash flows of the operation and discounts those cash flows to their present value, compares that present value to the carrying value of goodwill, and if it's less, then they have to write it down. If it's more, they just leave it where it is. In this situation, what Caterpillar is saying is that after learning all of this information about Suwei and realizing that the revenue had been improperly recorded in the past and that costs had been improperly deferred, that this operation was not going to be as profitable in the future as they had originally anticipated that it would be. And because of that, they've had to write down the goodwill. And so they wrote it all off at once. So now it's been written down, and there's not going to be able to recover this additional price. What it means is they paid too much for the company. Now, when they paid too much for the company, I mean, who do they have a claim against? The question, who's really at fault here? Clearly, there's going to be a lot of focus on the management of Suwei. I understand that some of the purchase price by Caterpillar was in the form of notes, and I'm sure Caterpillar's lawyers are looking to determine whether or not they have to actually pay that additional consideration to those shareholders. Shareholders and the company will also be looking to the auditors of the company before the acquisition, so I expect that they will be looking at a possible lawsuit. The accounting firms that did the due diligence, I think there'll be questions as to whether or not their work was done following professional standards, whether they overlooked the obvious. The shareholders also ought to be looking to management and the board. Did they follow a process? Did they ignore obvious red flags? I think there's a lot of questions here that will be answered in the next couple of years.
How about criminal charges? Do you expect anyone relating to this case will be arrested and facing criminal charges?
I'm not aware of any criminal charges on a fraud in China with respect to a company that's not listed in China. The Chinese government has not seemed to view that accounting frauds are actually crimes in China.
Now, let's expand to a more general sense of Chinese accounting practice landscape. What would you say are some of the most commonly used tactics by Chinese companies to potentially defraud investors?
Probably the most common situation has been revenue recognition problems or just fake revenue, because that's the most simple way to increase profits. Now, what has happened in many of these situations is once you record the sale, you got to find some place for it. The asset on the balance sheet, if you put it in accounts receivable, the auditors will sooner or later start asking questions about it. So many of these companies have recorded fake cash, and auditors had a very simple process for auditing cash. All they would do is send a letter to the bank, ask the bank how much money is in the account. Auditors started to figure out that their procedures for auditing cash were not very good. The auditors started to go to the bank and actually ask to see the balance on the computer screen and started to do other processes. One of the best ones of all was the auditor came in and wanted to check the bank balances online. And so they said, well, here's our password. You can use my computer. Here, log on and see our balance. So the auditor did that, went in and saw the bank balance. And the auditor goes back and starts to check out the bank statement and realizes they're using an interest rate on the bank account that's not one of the interest rates that the People's Bank of China uses. So they went back to the client and they said, what's going on here? And they looked at it, and they said, oh, we'll look into it. And they came back and a half hour later, and they said, oh, bank error. It's been fixed. So they went back, logged back on the computer, looked at the balance. Sure enough, it was corrected. But the auditor was a little suspicious in this situation. The auditor pushed some of the other buttons on the website and found out they went nowhere. The client had actually created a fake bank website. The one we saw some last year was putting deposits with contract manufacturers. So if you're using a contract manufacturer, you usually have to give them funds up front. That's a very hard number to audit. Some cases last year, auditors said, we can't verify this, so therefore we're not going to sign off on the accounts anymore. Probably the third area would be the use of variable interest entities. It's also been prone to fraud. Actually, the accounting frauds have been fairly crude in China. That is, they're not real sophisticated frauds compared to what we see in the West.
And lastly, what would you list as the most obvious red flags that investors should look out for?
Quite clearly, if a foreign company is going to acquire a Chinese company, it needs to go through a due diligence process that is significantly more rigorous than what it would normally undertake. It really needs to get access to all of the records and the people, really has to follow some forensic audit procedures that are intended to try to root out fraud. And that's one of the reasons why companies don't like to do that, because they get a lot of resistance from a target company that says, you know, we don't really want to let you come in and do that kind of detailed work, and why don't you trust us? But I think any foreign company that's doing a significant acquisition in China, it just simply has to realize it's in a very high-risk environment, and it needs to do much more work than it was accustomed to doing. That also probably means paying a lot more in fees. Too often, these due diligence exercises go to the lowest bidder, and that just simply is not appropriate. Too often, management is trying to find a way to get the deal done. And when you're doing a deal in China, you really ought to come to a different perspective, is look for reasons not to do the deal, not for reasons to do the deal, because there's a lot of risk in those situations.
Professor Paul Gillis runs a great blog on Chinese accounting called China Accounting Blog. Please check it out. Thank you so much, Paul, for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Nina. I appreciate it, too.